It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. The Pittsburgh Public Schools may be modifying its code of student conduct to reflect changing attitudes on zero tolerance. With input from parents, educators, and students, the school board will vote tomorrow on whether or not to decrease the use of exclusionary discipline, such as expulsion and suspension. Cheryl Kleiman is a staff attorney with the Education Law Center and was one of the collaborators on the new proposal. Last year, the Education Law Center filed a complaint with the U.S. Department of Education seeking an investigation into alleged discriminatory placement of students statewide in alternative education for disruptive youth programs. Cheryl Kleiman, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Thank you for having me.
And with us by phone is Dara Ware Allen. She is Assistant Superintendent of Student Support Services. Dara Ware Allen, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Thanks for having me.
You can join the conversation at 412-246-2002. That's 412-246-2002. Email ESSPGH at WESA.FM, on Twitter at ESSPGH, hashtag EP Live. What changes would you like to see to the student conduct code in the Pittsburgh Public Schools? 412-246-2002 is the number to call. Cheryl Kleiman, let's start with you. Why do you feel changes are needed to the student code of conduct? What prompted this whole push?
Well, the Education Law Center has been looking at school discipline and zero tolerance policies in Pittsburgh, around the state, and nationally for years. And I want to start by saying that zero tolerance policy is a policy that assigns predetermined punishment to a specific violation of school rules, regardless of the situation or the context. So in Pennsylvania and nationally, zero tolerance policies have become the norm, so that even minor violations like talking back or not following the rules have resulted in students' removal from school, even when that removal is not required by law.
So you're saying that these laws are too rigid, that there is not enough left to the discretion of the teacher, of the person that's running the classroom, to say, yeah, this person is talking out of turn, but Bobby may be having a bad day, and I'm not going to make a decision here. Whereas the zero tolerance forces that teacher to be the disciplinarian and to make a rigid decision.
Right. And under that existing system, what we found is that the students that end up with the highest rates of removal from school tend to come disproportionately from communities that are already poorly served by the education system. So namely, students of color and students with disabilities.
So how would this proposal then change how students are disciplined?
So the changes that are being voted on tomorrow night reflect a lot of stakeholder input, some of the folks that you mentioned, parents, students, educators, teachers, as well as recent federal guidance on this issue, and reiterates the concerns with zero tolerance policies and instead provides more support and resources for school districts to minimize exclusionary discipline while keeping schools safe.
And what are the parents saying, the people that come to you, Cheryl Kleiman, that come to you for legal advice? What are the problems that they have with this when it comes to their children?
Well, Paul, what we're hearing from parents and students is that they want their students and their children in school. They want to be in safe schools, but they believe the way to do that is to help students and include students, not exclude them.
Dara Ware Allen, again, Assistant Superintendent of Student Support Services with the Pittsburgh Public Schools. From the current policy, this line is proposed for elimination. Quote, criminal charges will be filed against any individual who commits an assault while at school, at a school-sponsored event, or traveling to or from school. End quote. Why should that line be eliminated?
Well, what we're looking at is providing, as Cheryl said, more discretion for individual context to be taken into consideration while still understanding and elevating the seriousness, of, certain behaviors. So that one is a change that will allow more discretion to take into account individual circumstances. And what I'd like to, just add as additional background is that reviewing our code of conduct is something that we do annually, and the Education Law Center has been a thought partner with us about making changes that we see as important as well. You know, and so while they've made recommendations, many of them have aligned with areas that we want to also improve upon. And so it has been a collaborative effort, and as a part of our review process, we're always looking at ways to make progress in minimizing zero tolerance within our code of conduct, and this is just another step in that direction. We've made a lot of progress, and this is just another step in that direction.
And Dara Ware-Allen, you represent the public schools, you represent the Pittsburgh Public School District. So in looking at these revisions, how much more complicated does this make the issue of dealing with a disruptive student? Whereas up to this point, you've had a very it's a black and white issue. There's not much gray area. There's not much room for discretion, if any, on the part of the teachers. So now, when the teacher is left to decide, it sounds like there is a lot more that will go into the decision-making process for them. So how much more complicated does it make the issue of when a child should be removed from the classroom?
Well, in working with teachers and administrators in alignment with our code of conduct, there's actually a lot of discretion that happens in terms of making judgments and thinking about individual students and knowing that student for referrals to be made in terms of how disciplinary action should be taken for certain offenses. So while that example that you used around the assault change of going from will to may, there won't actually be discretion that a teacher will have to make on that end. That will be something that would be referred to central office, to where we would review the individual circumstances. And so it gives us more discretion for how we handle certain offenses. You know, so violent offenses are ones where those are the ones to where we have to react, you know, in a certain way, you know, serious violent offenses or drug offenses. But this gives us more discretion to be able to take into account all of the circumstances. But a teacher, there's not much that's going to change on their end in terms of what gets referred to central office for an official review.
We're talking about proposed changes, modification to the Code of Student Conduct in the Pittsburgh Public Schools. There will be a vote tomorrow on whether or not to decrease the use of exclusionary discipline. And we're talking about this with Cheryl Kleiman. She is an attorney who has looked into this issue and who has dealt with the looking at alternative education for disruptive youth programs. Also with us is Dara Ware-Allen. She is Assistant Superintendent of Student Support Services for the Pittsburgh Public Schools. To join the conversation, you can call 412-246-2002. That's 412-246-2002. Email ESSPGH at WESA.FM, on Twitter at ESSPGH, hashtag EP Live. Let's go to Bill in Banksville. Bill, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Yes, I believe you should keep people in school at almost all costs, even if there's serious discipline problem, even if you have to hire a policeman to supervise them. Otherwise, you're releasing them onto the community, and if they're a danger, you shouldn't release them out onto the community and just throw them out onto the streets. So I believe, and I also believe we're paying people, principals and everything, $100,000, and they should have to exercise their discretion and not be released from having to use their discretion by arbitrary rules and automatic rulings. That's all I have to say.
All right. Thank you, Bill. And Cheryl Kleiman, again, she's a staff attorney with the Education Law Center and one of the collaborators on the new proposal being voted on tomorrow. I'm imagining that what Bill just said to us is some of what you've been hearing from some of the input you've been receiving from parents and others in the community.
Yes, and I would like to thank Bill for calling and echoing our shared goal of keeping students in school. One of the things I'd like to say about law enforcement is that involvement with law enforcement is probably the most significant form of discipline a student may face. So outcomes when interacting with police can include arrest, being found guilty in juvenile court, or a summary citation for a minor offense in adult court. And so the data shows that, like all other forms of exclusionary discipline, arrests are being used at a disproportionate rate for students of color, and particularly Black and Latino students. So the Education Law Center, we support the use of law enforcement when it's a serious criminal matter, but would urge minimizing the use of police when it's really a school matter.
And
if I can I jump in, Paul?
Yeah, go ahead. Dara, go ahead.
Is that's a change that we, when I gave my opening around how this is an annual process, and last year that was something that we worked to do is, you know, decriminalizing certain, you know, school misbehavior, you know, disruption versus disorderly conduct, you know, to Cheryl's point. And I also wanted to share, too, is that Pittsburgh Public Schools has a variety of supports that are available to students in those serious cases where, you know, like a student brings a weapon and they are excluded from school. We have to balance the safety of that child and consequence for that child with the safety of the entire school building for the students and the staff. And what we do is we provide if they are for in that case, a student would be referred for they would be expelled and referred for alternative education is a comprehensive program for students to still have access to the full curriculum of where they were previously in their home school so that they can work on getting intensive supports around changing that behavior for them to be reintegrated back into their school. It is a temporary placement. Those are some of the things that we outline within the revisions this year are really helping the section on alternative education match the practice, which has been providing the additional support that a student needs to then be reintegrated back into the school. And then for longer-term suspensions, students actually can go to the Student Achievement Center where they can have access to their coursework so that they are not, as Bill said, you know, out in the community, but they are not losing instructional time.
Cheryl Kleiman, I saw you shaking your head at one point there during the answer. Was there some part of that that you were raised some concerns for you?
Really what I wanted to make sure that was pointed out in the changes to the code was that the code helps reflect that when exclusionary discipline is being considered, that the changes require the school to provide greater notice to parents and students around their due process rights before they're being pushed into one of these programs. So basically what that means is that the parents are currently and their ability to tell their side of the story and how they can enforce those rights is emphasized in these changes so that we're minimizing the use of exclusionary discipline. But when it is considered, procedures should be in place, and a plan to return the student to school needs to happen immediately.
Dara, can you explain, is there a ramp-up process to the exclusionary discipline that takes place, you know, maybe a 1, 2, 3 strikes, you're out type thing, or just some way of letting the student and the student's family know that you're on thin ice here and you need to either modify your behavior or you will be expelled?
Yes. Yeah, so what Cheryl mentioned is, like she indicated, is making it very explicit to families about when students are exhibiting behaviors that progressively lead to expulsion or exclusionary discipline, up to expulsion and a referral to alternative education. And so a number of our schools are doing this well. And so I want to make sure that I communicate that. This, though, is to make it explicit within our code that it's not just left up to, you know, some of our administrators who do a great job at working with their students and their families, that as incidents occur, that they are engaging those families proactively and early on in the process, long before it gets to a referral for a long-term exclusion from school. And so that's what we've shored up in these changes, is making sure that it's not left to chance, but that there are clear thresholds for when a family needs to be notified. And an example of that might be on in-school suspensions, you know, to where students could before have up to 10 days before a family or parent was notified, where we've reduced that to 5 days. And in talking with some of my colleagues, you know, who are principals at schools, there are a number of principals where that is common practice. Again, we want to make sure that it's not left to chance.
We're talking with Dara Ware Allen, Assistant Superintendent of Student Support Services for the Pittsburgh Public Schools, whom you just heard, and Cheryl Kleiman, Staff Attorney with the Education Law Center, about a proposal being voted on tomorrow whether or not to decrease the use of exclusionary discipline in the Pittsburgh Public Schools. Your input is welcome at 412-246-2002. And let's go to Melinda on the north side. Melinda, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Hello, how are you?
Good, thank you. Go ahead.
I have a child who in fourth grade was attacked by two of her classmates to the point where she had a concussion and missed quite a number of days of school. And I just want to say that I support in-school suspension rather than out-of-school suspension, because in our personal case, girls were suspended for 10 days and returned to the school without any sort of, at least from our perspective, any kind of modification in their you know, freedom in school. They weren't restricted from activities, but the district's response really was to propose a safety plan that would have isolated our child instead of, you know, the children who clearly needed some extra attention.
So, Melinda, you're saying that the disciplinary action that comes within the course of the school system, and that is administrated by teachers and school administrators, is more effective than something that might occur while a child is away from the school?
That's my feeling, in that when you give kids basically 10 days off of school, because I feel like when children have behavior problems to the extent that they're assaulting fellow classmates, you know, when they're 9 years old, we're not talking about high school age kids. We're talking about very young students who clearly need more adult supervision. And so we don't know what their home life is like. We have no idea. But we know that they were away from a structured environment for 10 days. In our case, because of social media, I could see that these girls were on social media. You know, it's a whole new world.
So you're okay, Dara Ware Allen. Let's bring you in on this. Is it more effective to have the supervision of school administrators, of people who might understand more about how to modify a student's behavior, than for them to be sitting at home or elsewhere, where, as Melinda points out, they can be more adversely influenced?
So the case that she's talking about, and this happens, this can happen at the elementary school level, because there are not alternative education placements for students at the elementary level, is for various offenses that are serious as it relates to violence. There is a prescribed disciplinary action to where that is, you know, from state code. And as it relates to assault, we now have some discretion for how we handle that in terms of the upcoming changes that are going to be voted on. But as it relates to, like I was indicating before, around weapons and then drug offenses, there are very specific disciplinary actions that we still have to follow. But what I want to emphasize...
I guess what I'm saying is, in the case that Melinda, in her specific instance, it sounds like, if you feel differently, please say so, but it sounds like what you are feeling is that if school administrators have access to the student, rather than the student just being out of the school for 10 days and then coming back, that if it's in the case of a elementary school student, that there are things that you can do to basically educate that student and maybe instill in that boy or girl the idea that this behavior is wrong and this is what you need to do to fit in better.
So yes. So what I was getting ready to say, in addition to indicating that there are some areas where we do not have discretion in terms of what's prescribed as a disciplinary action from the state around violent offense, serious violent offenses. But what we do is, in all of our schools, we have a student assistance program where the staff work together, primarily led by the social worker or counselor, in teams about behaviors that are exhibited to make referrals and support students with various services that are going to help them around behaviors that they're exhibiting. You know, whether it is around aggression, if it's around trauma and loss, if it's around even just additional academic assistance, there's a range of supports that are provided through our student assistance program on the prevention and mental health side that go hand in hand with our code of conduct.
Let's go to Rochelle in Lawrenceville. Rochelle, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Hi. I'm calling basically to comment and say that I do believe that discipline should be given on a case-by-case basis. I was a student graduating from the New York State school system. But in middle school, I had, I was an AB student involved in sports, art clubs, many different school functions. And I was in advanced classes also. And I had spray painted my school. It was a big mistake. But afterwards, I was, for discipline, I was placed into an alternative education school where they did not offer the advanced placement classes that I had. They didn't have the science or math classes I needed to be in. And my education suffered. And I was in a school where other kids had beat up their teachers. They had poisoned other students. I mean, these were people that were really bad, and I had made one mistake, but it affected my education, and I later ended up dropping out because of that, although I did go back to graduate
in the regular
high school. It was horrible.
How old were you when you did this?
I was 15.
15. So you had basically one bad day. You did something that you regretted, but you ended up being forced out of school. And Cheryl Kleiman, this sounds like a typical case that you encountered as an attorney.
So Rochelle's scenario is something that we hear a lot from students, because our work is driven a lot by student input, and we work with a lot of student groups and student organizations with support from the Heinz Endowment. And what they're saying is, as students, that in-school interventions are more effective in changing behavior.
Right.
And that when people in positions of authority work with them, instead of doing things to them or for them, they're more likely to change their behavior.
It sounds like Rochelle could have used that kind of help. Let's take one last call from Ben in West Mifflin. Ben, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
I was wondering what the economic considerations or impacts of the proposal would be, meaning the increased administrative or decreased administrative and counseling time and cost associated with those.
Sure. Well, Dara Ware Allen, would there be an increase? Would you need to have increased support staff in order to handle the type of modifications that are being voted on tomorrow?
No, it is, again, reinforcing what our philosophy is for working, as Cheryl said, with students as opposed to doing things to them. I'm actually away at a restorative practices conference right now in helping, educate us on how to approach our work, in a more restorative way. And like I said, there are various school staff, teachers, and administrators that work with students. And so we want to make sure that becomes a belief and practice, district-wide. And so it's not that we are doing something new to where new resources would be required, but it's our approach for how we implement the code of conduct, how we create welcoming and safe environments for our students, that students want to be in school, that they feel that their school teachers and administrators and counselors and social workers are there to support them, and that there are options for giving them various supports before it gets to an exclusionary disciplinary level. We support that it should be progressive and proactive, and that students have voice within the process. And that's one of the reasons why, you know, we fully embrace the changes under the student rights section with significant input from Team Block of A-plus schools.
Taking it as a given that students who act up in class distract other students, make it difficult for learning to take place, how do you then come up with a policy that balances discipline and removal from class with the needs of the students, the rest of the students, and the needs of that particular class as a whole?
And that's, you know, just it's good teaching. It's the culture that's fostered at, you know, our individual schools, is that there are a variety of strategies for how teachers can engage all of their students while also handling or addressing and working with students that have been disruptors. And so, again, it's working, you know, it's working with students. And, again, it's teachers bringing all that they have to bear for how they develop the relationships with students and for them being able to redirect behavior, and then only excluding them, you know, after they've tried, you know, a series of strategies, and them exercising the influence that they have with that student because of the relationships that they have. And that's what we want for all of our schools, is that teachers have relationships with each of their students, that these kinds of behaviors, you know, can be addressed, so that not only that student, you know, will be engaged in learning, but to where we minimize disruption for the rest of the teaching and learning environment of the other students.
Cheryl Kleiman, what is the likelihood of the modifications to the student conduct code passing tomorrow?
We are hopeful that the changes will be passed on Wednesday and believe that they will increase positive educational outcomes for all students.
Cheryl Kleiman is a staff attorney with the Education Law Center and was one of the collaborators on a new proposal modifying the Code of Student Conduct in the Pittsburgh Public Schools. And again, that vote with input from parents, educators, and students, the school board will vote tomorrow on whether or not to decrease the use of exclusionary discipline, expulsion, and suspension. Also with us, Dara Ware Allen, Assistant Superintendent of Student Support Services for the Pittsburgh Public Schools. Thanks to both of you for being with us here on Essential Pittsburgh.
Thank you for having me. Thanks, Paul.
Coming up, while some say the minimum wage should be increased, others are calling for its elimination. It's Essential Pittsburgh on 90.5 WESA.